All right. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us. This is Brad Bell. I've got with me Tim Goetz, our missional director at The Well, and then Holly, who's been our extended family serving over here in the Middle East. We're actually here in country with her and doing a little quick interview with her in the home of one of her friends. And so you may hear some cars driving by or whatnot, maybe some horns honking. So pay no attention to that. We're just trying to get a feel for the transition that Holly's had. She's been here for about 6 months. And just kind of getting to know the culture and learning the language here. And so we wanted to just kind of hear from her some of the transitions. So, Holly, thanks for joining us here. Let me just ask you kind of a leading question to get us started. What have been some of the things as you've transitioned here into this culture here in the Middle East? What have been some of the learning lessons or things you've experienced that have been interesting for you?
Yeah, I've shared a lot with you guys, and I think just some of the big things of entering into a culture that's completely different than yours, I could probably more easily name the things that are similar than the things that are different, because there's so many things that are different. But just an example, like having to really learn how to do everything over again, like a baby, not knowing how to walk down the sidewalk or cross the street, or even how to eat, learning how to eat again, learning how to speak again, learning how to use the restroom again, like not even knowing how to use the toilet or the shower or anything, like having to get an orientation, like ask my host family, like, okay, what am I supposed to do with this hose? Like, the bucket? I don't get it. Like, which way do I stand if there's just a hole in the ground? Like, so some things like that being, you know, I didn't really think those things would be like huge difficulties, you know, and just realizing, wow, just the everyday survival things have been some of the biggest initial obstacles to get over. Opening the fridge and thinking, then saying, hey, yeah, just eat anything in the fridge, and open it and like not recognizing a single food, let alone, am I supposed to eat it with a fork? Is this just garnish, or am I supposed to eat it? Do I eat it with bread? I don't even know what that thing is, and I'm not going to touch it. Is that alive or dead? Those kind of things. Just little, simple, day-to-day living things make life very interesting but fun.
Tim and I were talking a little bit about the traffic here. Just the flow of life is very fluid. It's very organic, and people just kind of, as you can hear, people just kind of cross the street when they want, how they want. Tim, what was the imagery you were talking about?
It's very similar to playing Frogger. You got to cross quickly, and you got to be paying attention at all times, or you will experience game over.
Now, Holly, let me ask you this. You know, part of the experience of living in a culture like this, of course, is it is in many ways similar, but in many ways very different. You come, and there's special learning lessons that you glean as you're watching the way the people interact. You begin to experience what they value, etc. What are some of the things that you've seen that you've respected about the culture thus far?
Yeah, I think one of the main things that stands out pretty quickly, and I think you guys experience this too, is just the value of community and family. Above and the value of independence, like, as a female, even in the United States, like, it was trained to value your independence, learn how to do things on your own. Do what's best for you, you know, and here it's pretty much the opposite in that. You do what's best for the family and the community that you're part of. That is always more important than your single independence and what's best for you as a single individual. Just that high value of family and community. Our host mom was talking about today, just sharing with you guys how, you know, their family is so tight, they have to see each other and talk to each other at least twice a week, come and have a meal mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. Every Friday they sit down and have a meal together and spend the day together, go to the mosque and pray together, come home and hang out, have more tea, more coffee, more food. It's just being closely connected with your family is a huge, huge value. And they'll carve out tons of time to do that.
I remember saying this morning that as you go through the week, you talk on the phone to your siblings at least once a day, she said. And then she said, if your schedule was really, really busy, like you really didn't have any time, you saw each other twice a week.
Yeah.
Which in in the States, it's not quite like that at all.
Yeah, if you see them, you know, at holidays, that's good. Mm-hmm. Or you probably alternate holidays, you know, see your parents, see my wife's parents, you know, like hear that just, yeah, it doesn't happen.
Tim, what are some of your observations just in the short time you've been here as well? Anything that jumps out at you that you found to be kind of interesting?
Yeah, just the, for me, I think the shock was how welcoming everyone was and how relational, like Holly is mentioning, how relational everything is. We were literally, I think it was our first taxi ride driving around here. We hopped in a taxi. The taxi pulled up at a stoplight, and it was really close to a taxi right next to us, and the windows were all down, and so the taxi driver started talking to each other, and the taxi driver next to us invited us over to his house for coffee, and it was a little bit shocking, but we found out that that's not uncommon, that you know, all the taxi drivers have been very welcoming and offering us things and offering us to go to their house and have dinner, and that was just not what I expected. I think that was probably the biggest shift in my expectations.
Yeah,
I tell people, like, they're going to come here, you know, a lot of people come to the Middle East and they're scared they're going to be, like, accosted on the street, and I said, mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, probably are, by people that are inviting you over to come to get drink coffee or have a meal with them and their family. Like,
yeah.
Hospitality is just amazing, and especially as visitors and guests, they're going to protect you, make sure you get a good view of their country and who mm-hmm. they are, and it'd be a shame to them if you weren't pleased with your visit here.
We saw that as well, just hanging out on the street, people watching, and there's maybe a couple kids that are beggars or want to shine our shoes, and there were people that were just passing by, shooing them off, you know, telling them to go away because they didn't want us, it seemed, they didn't want us to get a bad perception or view of their, mm-hmm. their country.
Definitely.
Yeah. So. You know, you sometimes you go and you spend time in other countries that you may be more familiar with the language. You go to Mexico or whatnot, you could at least, you know, order a burrito and know what that is. Obviously, you come to some place in the Middle East where, you know, the people are speaking Arabic, which isn't something that you hear very often. What was that experience like for you, just originally transitioning here and realizing when you get into a taxi, you may not even know how to tell them anything mm-hmm. or where you're at in a city you're not familiar with yet. What was that process like for you?
Oh, yeah. I think first coming here, like, listening to people talking, it just sounded like gibberish. Like, I didn't have a clue. It was just somebody, like, are they just belching or is that actually a word? Like, are they actually saying something? I couldn't distinguish words, sentences, just noises, sounds, like, just... I mean, at least, like, Spanish, like, I can maybe, like, oh, that sort of sounds like an English word. I mean, nothing sounded familiar to English. Like, they have letters and sounds that, like, come from places out of my throat that I never expected, like, I'd have to try to produce. Like, we just don't have them. So, yeah, just, that was just a crazy try to figure out what people are saying. But, yeah, the first time I hopped in a taxi... I'd gotten, like, the word of the location of the nearest thing to my house since I said it. And the guy just looks at me like, doesn't have a clue what I'm saying.
Oh, no.
And so I say it again, saying, like, no clue. Said it, like, 10 times. And I think by the, like, 10th time, he was like, oh, this place. And I thought I was saying it the same every time. But apparently the 10th time was the right way. And he finally... started taking me somewhere, and I'm like, well, I hope this is where I want to go. Actually, my favorite taxi story is I tell the taxi driver, this is actually after a month or a few months, and I told him where I want to go, and he's like, okay. Or he says, Al Aini, Al Aini. And I'm like, no, not Al Aini. I want to go to this street, this mosque. Like, that's the landmarks I was using to get in my house. And he's all, Al Aini, Al Aini. And I'm like, No, I don't want to go to Al Aini. Like, I don't know where Al Aini is, but I don't want to go there. And he's like, Al Aini. And I'm like, finally, I'm just like, okay, he's taking me to Al Aini. I don't know where that is, but I'm going to find out. I'm adventuresome. So, and we get there. He takes me right to my house. You know, I get out, I say here, and I get out. And I wrote it down in my little notebook. I write things down that I don't understand. And asked my host family. I said, "This." He kept saying El Aini. Like, what's El Aini? Is that something right around here? And they just cracked up and laughed, and they were saying, "That's a word of like on my eye. Of course, I'll take you there. This, you're on my watch, and you're under my eye. I'm gonna get you there. I promise." So every time I was like telling him, no, take me to the street. And he's like, I'll take you there. I promise. And I'm like, no, this is where I want to go. You don't understand. He's like, I promise on my eye, I'll get through there. And so that's kind of one of my favorite, like, I just didn't have a concept.
For most people, you know, you hear, you know, Spanish or whatnot, and you kind of get it. But obviously Arabic is so different. Can you tell us something maybe in Arabic? Maybe like, just something you think would be easy, like, you know, just so we can hear it. Like, I'm going to the store, I'm going to buy some milk or whatever. Is there anything you can just kind of share? Because I think most people listening may not have ever heard, like, just Arabic. Especially from you. I mean, you've been here 6 months.
And my Arabic pronunciation is terrible. But
yeah, but most of these people don't have a clue.
You probably heard people say, Ahlan wa sahlan, like, is most of the greeting. It means welcome, like, welcome to our country. Most people, if I say it, they'll ask, "Men wenti," like, "Where are you from?" And I'd say, "America," and they'll go, "Ahlan wa sahlan," like, many welcomes. Or "Mit salami," means a thousand welcomes, is usually the people's response. I don't know what else I could say, like, some of the phrases you learn, "Inshallah," it's "God willing," which is a common phrase.
We've heard that one all the time. Which is awesome, because someone will say, like, "Hey, let's get together tomorrow for coffee." And they say, "Oh, what time?" They say, "Oh, how about, like, I don't know, 3 o'clock, inshallah.
Inshallah.
It's like, if I'm there at 3:30 or 4, then, you know, God didn't will for me to be there at 3, and so I'm there at 3:30 or 4. And so it's awesome, because it's kind of like a time with an asterisk. It's like, yeah, I'll meet you, maybe.
God willing. God wills it, it will happen. So you can always have it's a way to save face. Like, this is an honor and shame-based culture, and it's a way to... If they don't do it, it doesn't happen. It's not because they didn't do it. It's because God didn't want it to happen, which, right?
It does bring up an interesting point, just the spirituality of the people, obviously, in a Muslim country where the call to prayer is heard at every minaret of every mosque in the community 5 times a day, profoundly spiritual people. What have you found in terms of just the spiritual life and the way people interact and whatnot being here in this culture?
Yeah, I mean, I could you say spiritual, and I'd probably say more religious, but maybe we're meaning the same thing. In being very, at least for looking at it superficially, very moral people. Mm-hmm. They follow very strict religious laws, like no drinking. They don't eat pork products. They pray 5 times a day. There's pillars of their faith, things they have to follow. And so they're very strict about doing these things, as well as adhering to cultural practices, and everyone around them, their community, holds them to those things as well, holds them accountable to doing those things. So in that sense, it appears people appear very religious in following those things, and God is easily talked about. There isn't a separation as much as we have in the West between secular and spiritual. It's one and the same, like their everyday life. God is part of their everyday language, inshallah, when you're leaving someone, you'll say, "Allah salamik, the peace of God be with you," you know, or "God be with you" as you're walking away, like that. God is a part of the everyday language. In some ways that is great. It's huge openings to talk about God, and hopefully directing them to Jesus, which is what we want to show people. But people, are very willing and open. It's not a taboo subject. In fact, if you didn't talk about God or your religion, they would think you're a little weird. Like, why don't you talk about God? That's weird. Like, because it's a part of the everyday language.
Now, obviously from a Western worldview, especially from the States, we tend to have stereotypes of what a Muslim world really looks like or is like. Whether it's based on, you know, Hollywood's impressions of the latest movie or accused to be at least a filtered media perspective of what's really happening on the streets here in the Middle East. Were there any stereotypes that were shattered for you, or anything that you kind of came in with a certain perspective and then after actually living here said, well, it's actually not like that at all? Anything like that that jumps out at you?
Yeah, I mean, I have an example. I'll have you guys answer that afterwards, because you also experienced this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have a fresher, newer sense of it, maybe even. But for me, maybe I shouldn't admit this, but like, I didn't really know that much about the Middle East or the culture here before I actually moved out here. I mean, I'd come out to visit a year before I actually moved here, but I hadn't been out here before that. I had been to other Muslim cultures, but I had never been to the Middle East. So I had some of the stereotypes, and one of those being how women were treated, and or what women actually thought about, I didn't really have a clue. And even when I came to visit, I didn't have a clue until I actually lived here and got in the living rooms. Because what you see on the street are women, I mean, there's a whole variety, but you see a lot of women in these long black coats, veils covering their faces. You see other women that aren't as veiled, but are wearing long coats or their heads covered. And I always thought, okay, those women, they probably don't have problems with their self-image or, you know, because they're wearing these baggy coats, like, no problem there, you know. And then really you get into a living room when they take off those, their head coverings, take off those baggy coats, and they're just like any other woman, with the same concerns, and probably and influenced by the West as well, and have same issues of self-image and, you know, trying to maybe even more so impress the people around them, because, you know, we have the saying, don't judge a book by the cover. Here they judge the book by the cover, and part of that is looking religious out in the community, but then with your friends, the other girls that you're friends with around you, you know, putting on the best image possible, wearing, you know, the newest clothes and the newest fashion, same issues that we have, like same exact things. I totally didn't expect that. Yeah, just issues with eating, I mean, all those things are the same issues you wouldn't expect.
We talked briefly yesterday about this, and you mentioned some things I thought were fascinating about the head covering. You know, kind of my perspective was that, you know, this poor gal had a guy who was so insecure about their relationship that he forced her to cover herself and, you know, that kind of thing. But yet you brought up a very interesting perspective that many of the coverings that these women are wearing are by their choice, not just religiously, though there is a definite association there. But you mentioned there was a far deeper reason for some of these women choosing to cover themselves. Can you remember what we had talked about? Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah. It's not the same for all women, but I would say that I've asked some, like, did your dad make you wear that head covering? And, you know, and a lot of some response, no, I choose to do this. Like, I do this, well, yeah, our, you know, our religious law tells us we should cover our head. But they say, you know, we do this because we're showing honor to our family and my father and my family by covering my head, and religiously they were told to cover their head, and they believe that they're covering their head and covering their bodies and not showing them off to protect their men from sin, and that they're not being an object that provokes sin and lust from their men. So they're doing it in a sense to, they're giving up again that right maybe that they have to dress any way they want for the betterment of their community, their brothers, in their religion, so that's kind of that was a surprising perspective as well that I got when I first heard that.
Yeah. Tim, let me pass it on to you just quickly. Holly had kind of deferred to you on that question of any stereotypes that had been broken in actually coming here and being here in the Middle East. What comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I guess I think I mentioned it a little earlier, but a stereotype that I had is I'm gonna show up here. I'm a 6'3" white dude that stands out in the crowd. And I'm going to, you know, maybe I'm in danger. I don't know if I'm safe when I'm walking down the road. Do I need to be careful where I go? Do I, you know, am I need to be careful what I look at or what I say and that kind of thing. And so kind of just a huge unknown and I guess maybe even media-driven view of what it's going to be like for me when I get here was somewhat shattered when the taxi drivers were inviting us to their house for coffee.
That was your first taxi drive, wasn't it? Out from the hotel, yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me what was interesting is just the profound sense of the timelessness of this place. You know, we in the U.S., you know, we've been around for a couple hundred years and have done well, obviously in a short amount of time, but you realize the history of this place I mean, you read through the scriptures, and many of the locations that are here in the Middle East, you know, obviously are all over the pages of scripture, and you realize these people have not just endured the passing of presidents, but the passing of entire dynasties, entire civilizations, the rise and fall of empires have come and gone, and yet these people are still here, and they're still growing their pistachios, and they're still growing their, you know, their olives, and they're still eating, and they're still enjoying family, and they're still raising their kids, and they're, you know, raising up the door to their little shop, and they're carving out a living, and five times a day they're hearing the call to prayer, and they're doing their thing, and you realize that how small, at least for me, that's how small I felt in comparison to history, to what these people have both enjoyed and endured in their time. So, Holly, let me ask you one final question. As you're, you know, just kind of doing life here, and people may be checking in here to this podcast, is there anything that you think you'd like to communicate to them or say to them that might kind of summarize or encapsulate either your time here or maybe just something you want them to take away with them? And maybe think about that. Let me throw it to Tim as well, just to give you some time to process. Tim, anything for you that you think, man, this is, other than maybe the community piece, this is my primary takeaway from being here?
For me, I think it was probably good. It definitely was good coming here and seeing Holly and seeing, I guess, what she's experiencing. And we had the opportunity to go have coffee where she has coffee, and we were invited to dinner at where the house that she's living in with the family that she is living with. And we had we sat in their formal room where it's custom here to take guests and drink coffee with them. And so a takeaway for me, I think, would just be the just kind of seeing and experiencing what it is that that Holly and other potential extended family are gonna go through and experience.
Awesome. Holly, how about it?
Yeah. I would just say, I guess, I'm not special. Like, me being here is totally by God, because I feel like this is where God wanted me to be. And what I'm doing here is the same thing that I hope everybody else is doing at home, is looking at their neighbors that don't know Jesus and wanting them and feeling that burden to share that with them. That means knocking on their door and giving them some food, home-baked goods, inviting them over to have some tea, talking to them, sharing your heart. I mean, I happened to look and say, hey, I wanted to reach these people, so I moved into their house, and I'm eating meals with them, which is awesome. Not everybody can do that. I'm glad I get to do that, but I'm doing just what people, I hope, are doing at the Well and in Fresno, interacting with their neighbors, sharing their heart and their life, their hurts, their joys, but ultimately their hope in Christ. I mean, that's a cheesy spiritual answer, but, like, it's true, and I mean, I hope that's the takeaway message, that hopefully nobody's putting me on a pedestal. Like, I want to put Christ on that pedestal, and ultimately, like, yeah, what I'm doing here, if I inspire anybody, hopefully I'm inspiring them to do the same thing where they're at. Like, I'm local. I'm just here in a different culture, and it brings its own challenges, like learning another language. But, just takeaway message, anybody can do this. You can do it in your backyard. God may call you across the ocean, and you can do it there. Anybody can do this. But being encouraged, if you're listening to this, I would say it's you. God's wanting you to do this. If you said, hey, I want to hear what she has to say, maybe it's because God wanted to tell you this is what you need to be doing. Not overseas, but to your neighbor, to the person you interact with, meet at Starbucks, to anybody. This is what life's about.
Inshallah.
Inshallah.
Well, hey, thanks for checking in with us. And Holly, that's one of the reasons why we have so much respect and love for you, because of your humility and your commitment, your willingness to do it, to launch out. And I'll just say this again to you, but capture it here as well, that we have a profound respect for who you are and what you're doing. Really proud to be a part of this extended family opportunity with you. And just as a as a family that's supporting you. We just appreciate what you're doing. We're in your corner, and we're sure praying for you.
Yeah, and I'd say thanks for you guys coming out. The people at the well, they'll let you go for a week or so. I know there's tremendous and amazing things going on there, and I've enjoyed hearing about those things and feeling connected to what's going on at home. I do feel like extended family. I'm part of that family, and just seeing you guys, your face, is a huge, huge encouragement and a blessing, and I hope people feel connected to me, and I want to stay connected to what's going on with you guys.
Yeah, it's been fun. Holly said she's been listening to the podcast, so I guess the feed is international. Yeah. Banging it here in the Middle East. So.
Going through the Life Journal with you guys, right, everything.
Right on. That's awesome. Well, Holly, you're awesome. Thanks for taking the time with Tim and I here, putting up with us here for the last several days. And thanks to those of you checking us out here on the podcast. Inshallah.
Mitzalami.